Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello, everybody. This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you
from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks and Mid-America. And our guest is Grandfather Ed McGaugh. He's here to tell us about his new book. It's been out for a few months, Grandfather Ed.
Okay. First off, we dropped the title, Grandfather Ed. I hate that.
All righty.
Grandfather Wallace Black Elk. I love that title, but I can hunt and walk miles, and I've been 7 times down to Iowa, so until I quit going to Iowa and quit hunting pheasants every year, you can just call me Eagle Man.
All righty.
If I could pick a topic, I'd kind of like to talk about the environment.
Sure.
And in my latest book, Nature's Way, I cover heat, thin, gone, and too many. Heating of the planet, thinning of the ozone, gone resources, and too many people, overpopulation. Now, recently, and I'm kind of naive at times, and I was shocked to learn, and this is how naive I am, it's been going on all the time, heavy, and I wasn't even aware of it, but the Christian right, or the right wing, or whatever you want to call them, are heavily into denying that there is a planetary environmental dilemma. And are you aware of that?
They're into denying a lot of things. I was just talking with Chief Pappy Hicks of the Texas Cherokees last night, and he was telling me that, back when in the 80s, when the Sandinista thing was going on, that he would send in, he was down in Central America, working with the guys that we consider to be the good guys.
Yeah.
And he said that they would send in reports of Arabs and Chinese people, down there, and he says the government didn't want to know. If they knew, they had to do something about it. So, they're in denial about a lot of things.
Okay. Well, first off, to the audience here, I want to get that across that I'm quite a patriotic American, and I don't like to see people condemn someone that if you haven't walked in their shoes, if you have not equated what they have done, then I think, people should hold their tongue. Well, I volunteered for Korea, USMC, enlisted man, and came out of there a corporal. I went to college, GI Bill, did my duty for my country, and gave away a 13-month tour over there, and I think the Iraqi tours are far too long. 13 months of the combat area is plenty for any young man. But anyway, I went back in and became a pilot, an F-4 pilot, and wound up volunteering for a combat tour in Vietnam prior to my law school. I was accepted into law school in 66, but I turned it down when everybody else was bailing out. And I did a combat tour and did my 110 missions. So therefore, I don't think anybody can say, well, he doesn't love his country. No, I love the Corps, and I love the country, and I love my native spirituality and a lot of things. So that's the kind of man that I am. Now we'll go forward here. Bill Moyers gave a brilliant speech, an acceptance speech for some award from Harvard Medical School. And that is where I first became tipped off as to how far the right wing has gone in denying the environmental observation of hundreds of brilliant scientists on the four subjects I just gave. Heat, thin, gone, and too many. Let's give it those titles. Heating planet, thinning ozone, gone resource, too many people. And we probably could add water onto that. Now, the right wing, they're so locked up into their prophecy from 2,000 years ago that they're looking at the coming of the four horses of the apocalypse as a fulfillment of prophecy. And I don't look at it that way. I think it's something to be headed off. We have generations unborn, that's an Indian term, generations unborn, that we have to live for. We ideally should have the world that they come into be the same as the world that we were fortunate enough to come into.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I was carried at 22 and I was 10, 12 years old. I was able to hunt rabbits. Those days, you could go in a rancher's land and the ranchers, boys, get them rattlesnakes out of here and be careful you don't get bit. And you get all them cottontails you want. And we had a beautiful life. Swim in a creek. I never swam in a swimming pool. I swam in a rapid creek. Uh-huh. You know, beautiful thing. Found rocks, stones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, those are the beauties that I would love to see my children have. And yet my children don't have that now. They can still fly fish in the Black Hills. They can still do things. But there's poor city kids, and most of the people listening right here to your radio show do not have access to pheasant hunting, cottontail, deer hunting, et cetera, et cetera. The beauties, they don't even have to hunt, just the beauties of going out into Mother Nature, and that is such an added grace to your children's lives. In fact, everybody on this show here, take your children camping this summer, canoeing. Get out in Mother Earth, and you'd be surprised how, you know, beautiful that is. So, anyway, that's the type of person I am. So I take offense, or I'm disgusted with the religious rights attitude towards denying that the environment is crumbling and that we can just bring in all of endless coal trains. We can do everything George Bush says and his Republican Congress just to make a lot of people richer and could care less about Mother Earth, because Mother Earth will bite back, and she's starting to now. Just to report recently, a couple days ago, about how this huge Antarctic area, the size of Texas, is ready to melt, and it could bring the seas up 16 inches. Now, this is not poppycock goofball talk. This is actual scientific reports. And in my book, Nature's Way, I don't have that because that's recent in my book, Nature's Way, but I have four chapters of heat, thin, gone, and too many, and strictly science measurement, science observation. And what's the Indian take on observation and science? We respect science because science allows us to directly observe. We don't believe in anything. Us North believe in anything unless we see it, because that's what Creator made. That's the opening salvo here.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes, things are... Yeah, the whole idea that you can't change the outcome by changing your way. So, you know, there is prophecy in the Bible. It says that at one point that those that are killing Mother Earth will themselves be killed. I'll have to take a look and see if I can find that. I believe it's in the book of Revelation.
Well, I don't take much stake in the Bible. That's where you're at. That's fine. In fact, they call us the Antichrist. I call them the anti-mothers.
I'm just trying to point out some things to these people. All they hear is what their preachers say.
Oh, okay.
And they don't actually hear what was actually taught. They want to they pick and choose rather than getting in there studying and
well, to me, I don't even go near that Bible. I don't go near it because it's written by a white man, for one thing. And a lot of white men. And white men, I hate to be prejudiced, but there's a lot of good, sound, beautiful, extremely intelligent, brilliant white people. Look at Einstein. Look at Japanese. Oh, a whole bunch of people are just brilliant. So, I mean, I give them their due. But when it comes to me, depending on a book written by the Taliban, and they lived like Taliban, they acted like Taliban, they looked like Taliban, I place no stock in it. I place higher than anything written by man, Creator's nature. And it's very difficult for the white people, especially Christian people, to understand this, that I believe in a Creator. I think they believe in a Creator. Religion do. And they have sort of manified God, whereas we do not. Now, I don't want to get a big argument of which is which here, but we're dealing with mystery.
Uh-huh.
We say, we don't know. They say, we know. Well, that's fine. Good. But when you get back into the results of, they've become so dictatorial and so all-knowing, and that is what causes wars. And look at the war we got right now. We got two types of people. We got the Muslims, Islam, they know everything. We got the Christians, they know everything. And we got a horrendous war going on and tremendous hatred, and we're killing each other right and left. Whereas American Indian, he simply says, look, I don't know who Creator is, but I think there is one. And I think it's vast, I think it's big, and yet it's benevolent. It's very considerate. Look at what God gave us. So we're spiritual people. We are very, very spiritual. But we base our teachings on what Creator makes. In other words, what God directly makes in nature is the basis of our spirituality. What I see from what I've learned from the white man, I've been around long enough, and I even was forced into his thing when I was a child because they banned our religion.
Uh-huh.
What I see is they base their religious beliefs on a man-written book, which, well, you don't really know who wrote it. I mean, there's different kinds of versions. The Mormons got one where they get their own planet, and they get several wives, and you just go on and on and on. And whereas Mr. Inman, he's solid. Creator made nature. Birds, animals, even wolves, they share. They do not lie. They do not overuse.
And by the way, not to interrupt, but the thing about the Mormons is all that stuff you just mentioned, believe it or not, Mormonism and the Book of Mormon are two completely different things.
I talk about this all the time.
None of that stuff about having people getting planets.
We're talking about the Book of Mormon.
Joseph Smith got involved in something other than Mormonism and added that to the religion and people. And he was even told at a certain point that if he didn't stop talking to certain men, the church would go into condemnation. He continued talking to these guys, and dead.
So they got on him on that.
Then they got off on a tangent, and because all that stuff is not really supposed to be part of the religion, but that's just another story.
Mormons that do believe that way. Because I've talked to many, and they told me I'd get my own planet and a bunch of chicks and stuff like that.
Your
sex plans go on with you to the spirit world? You know, that's so foolish. Every corpse I've seen. In a funeral home, of course, and I've seen some, dead ones in combat. I never probed around, but I assumed that the sexual organs was on every corpse.
Yeah.
and I assumed that they weren't working. I didn't, check, but anyhow, and I assumed that when we go to spirit world, that the body stays back here. And so I think that the only thing that goes on in spirit world is the mind or the thought. And what use have we got for sexual organs up there in the spirit world? And yet, these Islamics are all getting 72 virgins. The Mormons are getting these extra wives.
Yep.
it's so utterly foolish. It's just fascinating how fairy tale-ish and mythology. You talk about mythology. They got far more mythology than us American Indians. We don't even believe in a Satan. We don't believe in a devil. Why? Never saw one. And I'll be darned if I'll believe that white man's devil. I believe that humans can be very bad, but that's their own thinking. And but I've never yet seen a devil. I've been out at night and all this. So I like my spirituality. I really do. And to me, it's far more wholesome. I actually don't think that you can be an Indian. I'll put this right out to all, especially those Oklahoma Indians. I don't think they're Indians. The ones, if you don't believe how your ancestors, like the Jews. If you do not believe the Jewish way, and this, I've had many Jews tell me this, they say they're not Jews. And even in Israel, you cannot hold office unless you are a Jewish believer. And I think that's pretty good for a definition of a Jew. I think we American Indians should do the same thing. I think if you're 1/8 or 1/16 or 1/32, you're more Indian than a full-blood that doesn't believe in what Wakantaka, Six Powers, Four Directions, ultimate creator, making everything, and then we learn from that that the animals are holy, all things are holy. If you don't believe that way, to me, you're not an Indian.
The vast majority of my people are Baptists, Cherokee.
Then I would consider them. Now they're considered them. We have an argument there, but don't you see where I'm coming from? The Jews are. I think the Jews got a good idea. I really do, and. Unless you're in a democracy, I suppose, like you can say we're American, and you can believe any way you want to. That's fine. But I think when we get right down to really clarifying an American Indian, that's my own personal, and I know I'm a minority, but I think these real traditional Indians will agree with me. In fact, I've had many a traditional Indian. We talked about that, and they agree. They said, yes, that really should be the term. I mean, if you don't believe according to your ancestors, how in the world can you call yourself an Indian?
That's your culture, is what your
culture
and religion defines your ethnicity.
Yes, yes. Say that again now.
Your culture
and your religion.
And your religion define your ethnicity.
Your ethnicity. I like that. I hope I can remember that.
I mean, I just, you know, I may have my terms wrong, but, you know, I think that's really defines who you are, is how you think. Well, in the Cherokee way, you were a full blood, even if you were a white person that was adopted. If you had the Cherokee mindset,
but,
and you believed in
but
Cherokee,
but he would believe in Cherokee ceremony, wouldn't he?
Yeah, yeah. If you were a white person, white people could acculturate. We had people of all colors actually that were part of us.
I would consider it would be nice to adopt him to make a little formality, because, you know, we're so ceremonial leaning. We're very ceremonial leaning. But if you had an adopted white person or a black person, Hassapas, and they believed, like say us Sioux now, I don't expect Cherokees to believe in a Sundance or this and that. Oh, that's just the Sundance is just a form. It's not. I mean, it's a part of our spirituality. You don't have to Sundance to be a Sioux Indian. And most Sioux do not Sundance. It's a too arduous ceremony, and only a few do it. But if you respect it, but if you sweat lodge, I think that most anybody claiming to be Indian, they should at least approach and try to do sweat lodge, you know.
Cherokee, we do just call it OC, and it's
okay.
For healing, you know.
Which puts them closer to Mother Earth, and the ceremony itself inside the lodge, I think, really helps you be Indian. And I think if a white person would do that and respect the Indian way and also be sharing and generous, all the traits that we deeply, deeply appreciate, bravery and courage, et cetera, loyalty to your country, loyalty to the United States of America, as long as it doesn't go around, you know, really hurting people
sure.
that are innocent. And I think a vote, all that stuff, but still, if you believe it that way, I'd say that a white person was as much Indian as any full blood.
Well, I tell my people.
Also, that's how I would look at it.
Carping about, the whites did this, whites did that. I go back and tell them, hey, look, our ancestors fought all that out in 1866. You know, we decided we were going to be friends, we were going to be one nation, and we were going to stop fighting amongst ourselves. This is the Indians in Oklahoma. And the oddly enough, the only group that in Oklahoma that reserved the right to fight among inside their tribe was the Cherokees. Because there's still this thing going on between the faction that took political power in Tahlequah and my people, the Chickamaugas.
Is that where you're at now? Are you Tahlequah?
I'm in Missouri.
Oh, you're in Missouri. Okay. But you're out of Tahlequah, though, originally?
No. My people, the Chickamauga seceded from the Cherokee Nation in 1777.
But they were Cherokee a long time ago.
They were the original. The Chickamauga were mainly a wolf. See, the wolf and the bear clan was the original Cherokee clan, and then the wolf was next, and the wolf clan was actually 50% of the Cherokee Nation and was the military protectors. And when the chiefs started to become corrupt, we just walked out in one day in 1777 en masse, walked out, and then we fought, declared war on the United States government, and then we repatriated back into the Cherokee Nation right after about 1801. And then
that was after the Long Walk, huh?
That was before. And then most of the traditional Cherokees moved to where I live here in southern Missouri and northern Arkansas. We had a reservation
from the east, right?
Huh?
From the east.
We had a reservation set up in
They were a huge tribe, weren't they? Originally.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the 1700s. Now, we Sioux were in the Carolinas. We were, and we think that to the southwest of us was the Cherokees. We're pretty right on that, aren't we?
Yep.
You were southwest of the. You were in Georgia in a huge area.
That's right.
Alabama and northern Alabama and up Kentucky, and that whole area was yours, wasn't it?
The story is there was a conflict between your people and mine, and you folks moved out onto the plains.
Anyhow, we had the Iroquois on one side, and we had the Cherokees, but we had such a big buffer, and there was so much land in those days.
Yeah.
that we got far enough away from each other that we say that we had little enemies, few enemies, and then the ocean was the disease came from the ocean, and that was the settlements of the Raleigh and the white traders, you know, up and down the coast, and that was disease, and then so we saw the great danger, and then the what's their names? I can't think of that big tribe too, to the west of us. They let us pass through, and we passed through the Ohio River Valley, and then we hit the Mississippi. And then we, like your tribe, broke off from your main tribe. The main body of Sioux had various. The Crows broke off from us. The Mandan, the Kansa, the Arkansas, the Missouri, the Iowa. Those are all Sioux words. And they, but they're Sioux based in language. And then the main body came up the Mississippi, and then of course we went out on the plains.
That's right. Quapaw did also. I have some friends.
Quapaw, yeah. And if, I don't know about Ponca or not, but Ponca could be Sioux in word. And Omaha is Sioux. And Winnebago, was, they were think they were Chippewa. I think they broke off from the Chippewas. And then the Chippewa named us Nadawasu, which is a French word and corruption of the Chippewa word, which means enemies.
Enemy.
Or snakes, which we really were. We were enemies to the Chippewa, and the bigger snakes were the Iroquois, and they called them a similar term, too.
Mm-hmm. That was their symbol.
What's that?
That was one of their symbols.
What, snake?
The snake people, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, they call them that. The Iroquois had a symbol for that, huh?
Yeah, I believe that was one of their symbols. See, there was a group of people. See, we followed the really, really ancient story is that... that your people were the turtle people, and that you came up. That we all came up from the south.
Did we?
And together. Well, actually, the turtle people came up first, followed by the snake people, and snake people being the Iroquois and the what the ethnologists call the Cherokee Creek.
Because well, here's what puzzles me now: Cherokees, Sioux, and Iroquois are fairly tall people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and then you take a look at the southern tribes, and I mean, we're going to talk Central America and that, South America tribe. They're little bitty guys. They're about the size of Viet Cong. And you look at the Mexican people that come up here, they're Indians, but they won't admit it. I don't know if you got many Indians in Missouri, but I mean, Mexicans, but we have a whole bunch of Minnesota come up and work, and they're small. They're really good workers. Now, where the hell do we get our height from? I think that we must have intermarried with some of the Celtics in that Robert.
Well, the Catoosas, the religious authorities of the Cherokees say that after we migrated up here the second time, which was 1,500 years ago, that we migrated to where I am right now, which is the Ozark Plateau, and that we moved east and northeast, or southeast, and we moved toward the east, and eventually, you know, all the way from Pennsylvania down into Georgia was our range.
Pennsylvania down into Georgia.
But our skeletal structure is completely and language is completely different.
Well, you are tall people, aren't you?
Well, Dr. Kelly came down from in the 30s, down from Harvard, and take a look at the bones of the ancestors, and he couldn't help but note that our skulls were dolichocephalic, which means they're long-headed. And he said that the Cherokee Creek people were all the way, you know, the Appalachian chain all the way from Alabama to Pennsylvania. Our graveyards were surrounded by people of literally of a different skeletal structure. And he says that... The only people
so you're different from them little bitty guys.
Well, the only people that we correspond with is the Phoenician people, and you know, and that goes along with our stories that we migrated here in boats, that we lived on an island off the coast of South America that sank, and we had warnings. Some of us, our elders.
Is that Atlantis? I thought Atlantis was further north.
Could
I don't know
it'd really. Be or Mu,
huh?
or
Mu, huh?
And that. Our elders were messing around with something called white fire, because you know, we're the people that mess around with crystals, and you know, crystal technology. You know,
well, crystals were all over your area though too.
That's right, and
God, you know,
so something happened.
God made crystals, you know that.
We caused an imbalance, and something happened. Our island sank, and we had to leave in boats. But that's that, and in 1750, Atakulakula, who was one of our chiefs, got the whole nation together and said that, you know, we moved here from across
the Moo, huh?
Ocean.
Is that the island named Moo?
Originally across the Eastern Ocean. See, we migrated all over the place. And he says,
okay, how about Babylon or something like that? Was there anything like that stuff?
Avalon, I believe so.
Avalon was, or some countries over there. The people, I mean, I just go back to, you know, Carolinas and possibly Long Island.
But they, you know, that's an explanation of why our skeletal structure, you know, and why they find, you know, Proto-Hebrew inscriptions on stones in our graveyards.
Uh-huh.
There's
uh-huh.
something.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, you know, apparently we are Abrahamic people that migrated here a long, long, long
possibly.
Ago.
Possibly.
And. And
well, Cherokees are pretty light complected ones that I've seen.
Yeah. You know, well, they said we fought a war with the mound builders, which would have been about 1,200 years ago, mm-hmm. and that's about the time that Madoc got here with from Wales. It was about 1,200, something like that, and that we intermarried with them to stop the war. We intermarried. And they said that the Ketua elders say that after that we moved into the Ohio Valley, mm-hmm. and we fought a really nasty war with the Iroquois, and to stop stop that war, we agreed to stop speaking our own language and speak theirs.
Well, your size does not lie, and the size of those eastern tribes, which includes the Cherokees. That cannot be denied. Now there we get back to observation, direct
uh-huh.
observation. So I think that, well, there's a good possibility we all three come from the same spot because
uh-huh.
there's a lot of similarity and we're definitely in size, you know. And, I think there's probably, and you know, we got way more prominent noses than your southwestern Indians and even your west coast Indians.
Uh-huh.
They have a more of a flatter nose. And we have, you know, we got some pretty good sized noses on our people, your people too. They're more like we say Nordic noses, or
uh-huh.
they got Cherokee or Ogallala noses, you know, the Swedes and the Germans and that bunch. But either way, it's just a term. But you go to Mount Rushmore or Crazy Horse Mountain, and on the wall you see those old time Indians from the Custer battle. They got their pictures up on the wall, and those guys had very prominent noses. And I'm sure what Cherokees I've seen, I've yet to see a little smashed down Viet Cong nose, you know, unless they had an accident or something like that. So those features, I say, discerns us a little differently than a lot of these tribes here in America.
Sure.
Any other observation?
Well,
interesting.
Chief Hicks down in the Cherokee Nation of Mexico has got some really interesting stuff on his website, CherokeeNationMexico.com. He said we lived alongside the Mayans, and, you know, our civilization broke up about the same time theirs did, about 1,500 years ago.
Well, the Aztecs are big. Aztecs are big people. I'm a real tall guy I just met at the Denver Indian Market Show, and he's an artist, and big guy. And he was Aztec, and he was telling me, yes, he said, we're related to you. Here they have the same colors as Black Elk. Black Elk has red east, yellow south, black west, and white north. That's the colors I prefer also. And here the Aztecs, the Black Elk, and this tribe down here in Minneapolis, the real rich ones that make about $1 million a year per person over 18, the Shakopee Mattawakans, they are also red, white, black, and yellow. I mean red, yellow, black, and white. And
interesting.
So, but the Aztecs were tall people, from what this guy is telling me. And I'd probably... If there's a few Aztec listeners on here, they'll probably verify this one way or another.
Well, there's ceramic busts on the Cherokee Nation of Mexico website showing a people that wore something like a turban, and they had rather than having the convex Mayan nose, they had the concave nose, kind of a ski-dump nose. And
you
must get
feedback then, don't you?
One of the first things I was told was that the Wapatata clan, and that's actually a misnomer, it's really the Ketua clan, the Savannah clan, Wapatata, really the original clan, had a kind of a ski jump nose.
Oh,
And that and they also had webbed fingers.
This Aztec Indian, too, had noses like we do, you know, more prominent
yeah,
noses.
Right.
I mean, when I was little, I wished I had one of them little small Mexican noses. You know, when you're a teenager, you're all nose, you know, you're
really
homely. And I wish the hell I would have had a little bitty nose.
Well, the,
I hope some reader, some listener would at least, if they're Aztec, if they got any comments, I hope they send you an email and well, make your comments.
I'm sorry, I got you off on that tangent.
Well, that's, no, it's all interesting. It's just, you know, these things are all interesting. You can't, you know, we can't just sit here and complain about the environment. It's, you know, I think these other features, and I think people like it if you say, well, the Mandan went up, they broke off at the Missouri River, and the Mandan are big people, like the Hunkpapa. The Hunkpapas are bigger than a lot of our other Sioux tribes, and the Mandans are and real big guys, and they also are very, very Caucasian-looking, the Mandans. And yet they speak Sioux in language. I stayed in their motel there, and it was Four Bears Motel, and Ma To To Pa is, some of us spell with a D, and they spelled it with a T or reverse. I can't remember exactly, but they have a Siouan-based language.
Well, I got on a, I was up in Minot and training in the trucking vocation, and I had to, something happened, and I had to be put on a bus and shipped back to Chattanooga to get a new trainer, and this full-blood Indian got on, and carrying, of all things, a buffalo skull. And the guy had been drinking. And a guy had been drinking, and I thought to myself, oh man, he's going to get in trouble. I better set him down because, you know, the bus drivers will put you off. And come on, sit down here. You know, we started talking. I said, hey, I said, is it true the stories about your people and Madoc and the whites? He says, oh yeah. He says, we know that that there was these white people that came about 1,000 years ago. And he said his mother was the last Mandan speaker, and they were transcribing the language from her. But and then we stopped at a bus station, and I was trying to keep him from drinking more on it because he did have more beers, and I didn't want to get thrown off. And we put the buffalo skull into a locker, and as we were doing so, a piece of it from the back of the skull fell off into my hand. And he says, that's supposed to stay with you now. So I've still got it.
Yeah, well, spirits probably did that.
But they remember.
One comment I'd like to make is that it seems that there's a basic commonality of spiritual belief amongst your northeastern tribes. I mean, I think they generally had a commonality of a great spirit. Wouldn't you think so? I mean, like a huge creator, higher power, but a greater mystery.
Oh, yeah.
I seem to find that commonality amongst all of northern North America, and predominantly from the Northeast, and the value system too. They were very, very alike in value system. You know, sharing, generosity, bravery, courage, honesty. They carried honesty and truth so much further than the white people do, that we look at truthfulness as so different. You know, like an Indian. If you ask him a question, who is God? Most Indians that I know, the traditional ones, think that they would be lying if they said anything other than, I don't know. They think by saying, I don't know, that's a more truthful answer. And that's how far they carry truth. They will not comment on something if they do not know the subject real well. Like they're skinning a deer and they know what's best, they'll tell you that. But when you ask them a question, who is God? They'll say, I don't know. But we think it exists. And that's what I like about the Indian way, is that they do admit to mystery, and they don't pompously always claim, like the white man to me, as my stereotype of the white man, and is that he knows everything. And the way the world is shaping up, he does not know everything.
Yep.
We're in for some very, very difficult times coming up, just by the fact that the white man thought he knew everything. And now our resources are pretty much gone.
Yep.
And our generations unborn are going to pay seriously. And we're becoming so overpopulated in this land. I mean, why do we keep allowing people to come in? You know, God, we got enough here as it is. So I think we need an Indian in charge of the immigration board.
Maybe we should have started 500 years ago.
Yeah. How much time do we have left here?
All you want.
Oh, well, we've talked a little while here, so let's see, what any other subject you want to cover?
Well, tell the folks about your newest book.
Nature's Way?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nature's Way starts out, the first six chapters, 11 chapters. The first six, naturally the reader, I think, is very, very curious about the Indian Way. So I talk about our history and our values and why we think the way we do. And I can't write a book without Black Elk's vision. So I pop Black Elk's vision pretty well cut down, and I tell them to go to a couple other books if you really want a real thorough material on Black Elk's vision. Reading Black Elk's vision itself is good. Black Elk speaks. It's very difficult. And so some books kind of explain it a little bit better, and I think that helps the reader out. So I do that. Then I go into the animals and explain each animal, not every animal we have, but the main ones, and what depth we get from each animal. Eagle observation, bear medicine, the orca, intuition, and then I give examples of each animal, some real-life examples. And so the reader is getting pretty orientated now along the Indian path. And then, boom, I go into Chapter 7. Now, I only got four chapters left after Chapter 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And those are the four horses of the apocalypse, the Indian version of, I use this white man's term, apocalypse. That's not an Indian term, but I just use that because Indians, whites are so familiar with that. And it's mostly whites that are reading my book. And so then I go Chapter 7, Organized Religion. And it might tease some people off, but I'm telling the truth as far as my observations. And I think organized religion has really dropped the ball when it comes to looking at the dangers of the environment. I mean, the dangerous situation, the environment's not waiting to kill us all, but it's how we pushed it, and now the result will be, we could have tremendous suffering. I even name names. The Catholic Church bears the brunt of it, but I get into some of the Protestants as well, and I put them on the spotlight, and then boom, I go on into scientifically. I had 100 notes per chapter, scientific notes, really heavy. I had two people help me on that one, had to. And we really went into heating of the planet. We really went into thinning of the ozone. Gone resources, especially oil. And then the last chapter, overpopulation.
Oh, yeah.
1825, I'll just give you some figures, real quick ones. 1825, we reached our first billion. It took a century to reach 2 billion, a century, right around 1920-something, we reached 2 billion. And from that, every 12, 14 years now, we're increasing a billion. We're almost at 7 billion. And when we reach 14 billion, we're just doubling up. It's going to be, and then 28 billion, forget about it. It's just calamity. And you get that, you'll pretty much punch into your computer now, and in the last 2, 3, 4 days, it's really heavy on this environmental findings of the scientists,
yep.
Especially on heating of the planet. And so then I end on overpopulation. So that's Nature's Way. And what's unique about it is that it tells you about a people that kept the planet pristine, their half of it, the entire half, the Western Hemisphere. And then it tells about what's happened and the dilemma we face. And so it's and then I find out that the Christian right is just thinks that prophecy is being fulfilled. They think prophecy is being fulfilled by us fighting in Iraq.
Yeah.
And I don't really think we can afford it. We're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. And we have so much to do back here. It's unbelievable. And it's not working out in Iraq. It's just not working out. So that's it. That's on Nature's Way. It's a quickie explanation. Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, they have it, in case people are interested. I don't like to be a salesman or nothing like that. So, but if you want to read it, they can read it.
It's important. You know, the scientists now, I mean, they're everybody, whether it's the reinsurers, which are the really big companies behind the insurance company, Swiss Re, being the biggest, the Vatican, the Pentagon, NASA, everybody's talking about climate change. You know, the Gulf Stream is shutting down. The climate.
And the Gulf Stream is a very important item there, isn't it? That could change.
I mean, when the Gulf Stream shuts down, all of a sudden that puts the Great Britain and Northern Europe in the same climate as Labrador. You know, we got.
Really?
Can you imagine if Europe couldn't grow crops anymore? There's a war.
Ooh.
There's a war waiting to happen right there.
Oh my God.
Huh. Yeah, these are the things that are happening, and you know, the Vatican's you know, built a big observatory.
Now, there's no prophecy that says that, is there?
About what?
About England and all that becoming like Labrador. There's nothing.
As a matter of fact, Fatima three, you know, the third Fatima prophecy was very closely guarded. And Pope John Paul II, he was asked to comment about it, and he said, well, he said, you know, he says, if we were to tell you that great sheets of ice were going to be coming down from the north and wiping out entire continents, you know, it would really upset you, so...
what keeps him from telling us, you know?
Yeah, you know, sure. You know, in other words...
Why is he afraid of the truth?
He told us without telling us, and see, ice ages, volcanism always accompanies ice ages, and so the increase in volcanoes is just another signal we're headed into another ice age, and the Hopi have said a long time ago that things are going to get colder. And it looks like, you know, well, it was only, I believe, only a 10-degree difference in the average temperature between now and the time that Seattle was under 5,000 feet of ice.
Mm. Now, this report that was sent, it mentioned something like that, that is only just what you said, there's only a 10-degree difference. Yeah. Oh boy! You know, I wish I could live 20, 30 more years. I would really see some interesting things.
And, well, the UN, the UN is warning about a locust plague. You know, they got a big problem with locust in the Middle East. Leprosy's making a comeback.
Huh.
Oceanographers, and you know, all this is tied to the sun also, and what's going on with the sun.
Huh.
And you know, our growing, if you look at the you know, you've seen those maps of the seed catalogs that come and tell you what zone, you know, for what time to plant. Well,
sure.
If you look at the growing zones from 4 years ago, you realize that the zone that ran through northern Missouri, which is a colder zone before, has moved down to 150 miles south in 40 years.
Good God.
So,
we're in for some interesting times.
Yeah, we sure are.
Fatal, you know, possibly for an advent of fatal times, but it's beginning to show us now. So, there's really no solution except for humans to start realizing. To me, I guess that's why I write books. Is I disagree with the religious right. I think that their approach is very, very wrong. And I think that Creator, this great gift that Ultimate has given us, needs to be respected, needs to be cared for. Well, here we have a difference of opinion. The Christian right, and they're sitting back and saying, prophecy is being fulfilled. We're not going to do anything about it. We're going to keep spewing stuff up. And then what makes it really bad is that they think that their concept of God is going to appear most likely in the sky, because most people look up, the United States appear in some tunnel or something. But anyhow, he appears in the sky, and it's a he, of course. And they, this great God of theirs concept is going to open up monstrous seams of oil and fuel, and nirvana is all going to come back again.
Yeah.
To me, that's fairy tale.
Well, if they'd have paid attention to, everybody talks about Revelation. But they missed this one little script, this one little verse in Revelations. John, in 11th chapter of Revelations, verse 18, he writes, "The time has come for destroying those who destroy the earth." The time has come for destroying those who destroy the earth. So you can't say that the Bible doesn't say that we're supposed to be good stewards over the earth. That's not true.
Oh, good. That's good.
That's not true.
Well, why come the Christian right don't understand that? You know,
because they don't read their Bibles. They're doing the same thing they did 500 years ago before the printing press, which they're too lazy. You see, because they're so keyed into the written word, they figure, oh, I don't have to do any thinking. But the theologians, you know, the ones who are paying.
They're listening to the wrong guys, too.
Oh, yeah. You know, we'll listen to the theologians.
This is a gift from God. This the planet is a gift from Creator.
Yeah.
Gift, G-I-F-T. Now, when people destroy or over-consume or take from this wondrous, loving gift that God gave us, to me, how in the world would God not punish those people, you know, or not at least, you know, reprimand them in some form?
Well, you know, we just saw.
Why give them? Well, would that God come down and just to give them? Oh, well, you guys don't get care of it. Here now, here, choose your oil. And I don't think Creator rewards stupidity. I really don't.
Well, we're seeing the seas rise. You were just talking about that. Okay, let me give you some quotes. Eagle Man, here's Muhammad writing in the Quran.
Uh-huh.
He said, "And when the seas rise, every soul will know that it hath made ready for the judgment day." Quetzalcoatl, writing in 94 A.D.
Now he's the Indian guy, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. He said, "The balance of nature will be lost when the ocean tides shall obey no shore." Brigham Young said, the second Mormon prophet, he says, "The sea shall heave itself beyond its bounds, engulfing mighty cities." The Hopi said that the majority of the human race will die out in the near future from a plague of fear and despair, and we're starting to see that because people are getting scared. And Isaiah, in the 30th chapter, verse 22, said, "And there shall be upon every high mountain and upon every high hill, rivers and streams of water in the day of the great slaughter when the towers fall." Well, we've just had a couple of towers fall recently, too. Hermes, a first century Egyptian, Hermes Trismegistus, said that fortunate is the man who knows how to read the signs of the times, for that man shall escape many misfortunes or at least be prepared to understand the blow.
Wow, you've done your homework on this stuff.
Well, these are actually sent to me because we've got 300 eyes and ears out there. The Native Prophecy Council are.
But you're picking up on the right one.
Yeah, you know, and you know, and you know.
I congratulate you for that. I really appreciate it. Have you got this down? Well, you should.
It's on my website.
You should write a paper on
I'll
this
send you the
and
link.
Then pop it out to us. Write a paper on this, what you just told.
You bet.
Send it to us an email.
It's too bad when you published your book.
I'd love to have that in there.
But you could have had that quote from John in Revelations about the time has come.
Oh yes.
Oh man.
Why don't you send me that to me? Because I'm going to do one more called Spirit World.
Oh my God.
And, send that to me, and then I'll quote you, is you know, give you credits for that.
Well,
send that to me and what you just told me, and Spirit World won't come out for a year or so because Harper doesn't pop them out just back to back. You know, they give a couple of years breathing room. And but on Spirit World, it would fit in real well. So and then I'll give you, I'll write put your name in there where you want it, and I'll put that as quoting from you. And also what you just told me about those, you know, Quetzalcoatl and the Saya and that. So that would help get the message across.
It's in your it's in your mailbox now.
Okay, I really
appreciate it. Well, we like you to talk as long as you want to, but if you feel like you're done.
This is good. I think if we leave on those quotes that you had, I think that's very, very powerful.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we're really wanting to get the message out here to these listeners. So.
Well, I want to thank
you. Stand here, and I think that it's been very fruitful.
Well, I want to thank you for all the work you do. You know, folks, you know, Eagle Man probably gives away as many books as he sells. And you want to tell folks about your prison ministry?
Well, the prison, yeah. We gave a lot of books away, especially Eagle Vision. And we get a lot of response from back from the prisoners all over the United States. So anyhow, that has been a project, and we felt very successful on it. My partner died now, but he really contributed a lot of money. He was a casino Indian. And we gave, I'd say, several thousand books out of Eagle Vision to the prisoners across the land, so I'm real happy about that. And the prisoners are sitting in that jail cell and the prisons, and they read. And I think getting the good Indian spiritual books, so if you read, no matter what book you read, read Black Hawk Speaks or something, turn around and send it to a prison. And I think that you'll be helping a lot of people.
Outstanding.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, Blue Water.
Thank you so much, and we'll keep in touch. That stuff's in your mailbox.
Okay, I sure appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Let the truth